Hey, Murderheads. I'm Nikki, one of your hosts.
And it's Taylor, your other host.
And together, we are Murder, She Taped. Oh, hey. Us again.
Nikki just woke up from her marijuana. She's been dead for like the past 2 hours.
And I had coffee. So just on last episode, we had been listening to it together, and we cracked up because there's a moment in the episode
where she was high.
We talk about kittens, and then I say kittens in a cup or something like that.
Because she was high.
And then we both just looked at each other, and I was like,
we both had coffee in our mouths, and I almost spit all over my notes.
Like, did that even just come out of my mouth? So I don't know what that meant, guys. So any kitten lovers, you know,
put them in a cup.
I'm never putting kittens in a cup. I don't know what it was. So I apologize for that.
I've never heard like
kittens in a cup.
Like you.
Oh gosh. Okay. Also, like, have you been listening to your voice like on the podcast and you're just like
hating it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like having a moment the other day where I'm listening to our podcast and like. Yeah, I know I listen to my own podcast. Like, that's maybe I'm self-centered. So I was listening to
it. We know this.
And I was like sitting on the couch and I had a moment. We watched the movie like Changeling with Angelina Jolie.
No.
So it's on like the chain coop murders in the States. And she's talking about, so her son goes missing. And then she's like, search for her son. And then there's a moment where her son comes back and it's not her son. And they like introduce them and she's like, that's not my son. And she, like, has this total meltdown. That's me with my voice. That is not my voice. And I was like, this isn't my voice. That's not my voice. I'm, like, total denial. And then there's a part in the movie where, like, no, just take your son home. It's okay. And then at one moment I had was like, maybe it is my voice. Maybe I'll be okay with it.
Are you going to talk to your therapist about this next week? Because I feel like it might be worth it for you. Like, I hate how I sound. I hate it. But, I mean, like, I'm not, like...
Oh my god, I was
in
like,
denial.
Oh, I was in denial, like super hard. Like I was like, that's
what
not
did you
me.
Think I was like putting a different tune on your yeah. voice, like for the hell of it? I'm gonna make
you auto-tuned sounds... my voice. I was like, that's not me. This is person. It was super funny.
If you think yeah. You know, auto-tune makes you sound better, right? So if I'm auto-tuning your voice, man, do you ever sound awful?
You anti-auto-tune my voice.
You anti-do it.
Have you heard about the cases in Fort Saskatchewan where these girls are going missing?
Oh, what?
And it's not even that scary. Okay. So, it had to have been last week or the week before. And me and my friend Andrea were going for dinner. And she was like, have you heard about the girls going missing? And I was like, I did, because I heard it on the radio. But apparently they were saying, don't worry about it. These girls are now coming back up. Like, we're finding them within, like, 48 hours. So apparently, teens and tweens around Fort Saskatchewan have decided that they're going to play a game. Where they're going to go missing.
I'm so embarrassed that I grew up here.
Where they're going to go missing for so long, and when they get shared on, like, social media, so, like, Facebook, the news, the radio stations, anything around Fort Saskatchewan, they get points. It's a point system.
You're fucking joking.
No, I was, like, reading it the other day because there was, like, three girls that had went missing in, like, the week, and I was like, holy shit, like, and then all of a sudden everyone's, like, speculating, and it's getting really scary of, like, maybe something's happening around Fort Saskatchewan, and then the police were like, no, we found all three of them. This is why.
This is why natural selection should be a thing. Do you know what that is?
So...
Natural selection?
No.
So it's like...
Darwinism.
Yeah. Like, okay. if you're smart and strong, you live. But
no,
if you're
I don't like
dumb
that.
And...
No, and the reason why is because one time my friend was like, I believe in Darwinism. And then
he... Oh, are you telling me
and
this?
And then he looked at me and he said...
People with glasses.
Because I wear glasses. And he goes... And he looks at me, because I have bad fucking eyes. He looks at me and says, you wouldn't be here right now if I had my way with Darwinism. And then no one would have glasses. And then everyone... It would just be the strongest of the strong. And it would be totally fine.
I just, like... It kills me that everyone always complained about kind of our generation. And then you look at the rejects growing up now and you're like, yeah, we weren't so bad.
Right?
Like, popping Tide Pods isn't that big of a deal.
So, yeah, I just heard that and I thought it was insane.
I find that like really weird. I've never like, and what, this is the perfect opportunity for a kidnapper or a serial killer or somebody to just sneak in and be like, haha, they're just still playing their game. Now I'm going to take this chick.
I know. And like as a parent too, like.
Oh my God, my girl would be ground. And my kid, whether it was a boy or girl, and was pulling this shit, grounded. You're not seeing the light of day for at least
and
6 months.
And I think about like Rosie, if Rosie was to go missing. Oh, I mean, I cried when I dropped her off to daycare 2 years ago, to doggy daycare that I chose that she was going to go to daycare. I cried like a little baby. So I can't imagine if she went missing, like, I would lose my shit.
She just came back.
And this is a thing. Like, yeah, and then she comes back, like, just don't, oh, hey, Mom, this is just a joke. I got 50 points. Ah, fuck you.
Like, I got 50 points. Wow.
Yeah. So,
good thing I moved away. Sorry you're still here.
I know. So, it's kind of crazy. Anything you want to discuss today?
I'm just going to sip my coffee and enjoy this story that I have not heard.
Okay, so let's dive into episode number 4. It's the Shoreline 6 murders, the Rena Vert case.
She almost forgot.
Well, yeah, this is the Rena Vert case, also known as the Shoreline 6 murders. So it happened on Vancouver Island in Saanich, and this was like a huge case on the island. I guess everyone knows about it, which is kind of cool. So a lot of the information I found on this case was from Wikipedia and Vice. So there is award-winning and best-selling book called Under the Bridge, The True Story of the Murder of Rena Burke. And that's by Rebecca Godfrey. There's another one, The Shape of a Girl by Joan McLeod, and The Beckoners by Carrie Mack. So if you guys want to know more about it, definitely check out those. So let's start off with a little background on Rena. So Rena was 14 years old and came from a large extended family who immigrated from India. Her family was described as a minority within a minority, as they were of the Jehovah Witness religion in the South Asian community of 3,000, which was predominantly Sikh. So they were kind of outcasts, I guess, like as a whole family.
Outcasts within their own.
Yeah, which is kind of really sad. Mm-hmm. Like, but Jehovah Witness...
Jehovah's Witness?
Is that what it is?
I don't know. Maybe I'm fucking up. I always say Jehovah's Witness.
Jehovah Witness.
Jehovah's...
I don't know. Well, it doesn't matter. Religion. If you're a Jehovah Witness, Jehovah's Jehovah, let us know how to pronounce that.
That's an intense religion.
Yeah. So
like, I'm very dedicated.
So it's pretty, yeah. So that's... It was interesting. So Rena was described as a girl who was desperate for acceptance. She was a shy girl with broad shoulders and uneasy eyes. She rebelled against the rules of her home and admired the carefree swagger and freedom of confident females she longed to be accepted by. So she... I know, and it's kind of sad. She painted her nails blue and listened to Biggie and Puff Daddy, which I listened to.
So she wasn't, like, crazy into this religion?
No, she was totally not. Not even close. So she was vulnerable, tender, and caring. However, she was taunted, rejected, and ignored by girls whose subculture was influenced by LA street gangs.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. So from the research I've dug up, apparently Rena messed with the wrong girls, and that's how the whole crime was sparked. So Rena allegedly took a notebook from a girl named Nicole Cook, who was friends with one of the convicted. So after taking the notebook, Rena called some of the boys in it, telling them Nicole wasn't as beautiful as she thought she was, that she had AIDS, and that her eyebrows were fake. And I mean, nowadays, every eyebrows are fake. My eyebrows are fake. Your eyebrows are fake. So in today's culture...
My eyebrows are throbbing.
You just got them waxed, too. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of just like a really immature thing to do. So the act enraged Nicole, and she started planning for revenge. So it also noted that another girl was also angry with Rena for stealing her boyfriend. So Rena lived with the two girls in a youth group home. So I also want to say that the group home...
Unstable environment.
So the group home, she tried to get out of her parents all the time. Like, she didn't want to live with them. She's seen, this was like a really tough community, I guess. Like, there's a lot of kids that were in group homes. So she had actually said, I had heard in another podcast that I was listening to, that she had actually told the police that she was getting sexually assaulted by her dad, which wasn't true.
Oh, shit.
So she went into foster care for a little bit, but then she bounced back home. Because it wasn't the life she wanted. She wanted to be out on her own, but she also wanted to be with her parents. Like, she was, it was like she was stuck in the middle.
If that makes sense. So trying to be rebellious, but then realizing but then that really, independency really sucked. Want to
be home. Yeah. So I thought that was really interesting.
I'm sorry, how old is she?
She's 14.
Okay. So she's also going through crazy hormones at that age.
Yeah. So she was in a group home, but she also bounced back and forth to her home.
Okay.
So it's suggested that Rena may have done those things in order to assert herself as tough. Nicole allegedly set a beatdown plan in motion for that Friday night with other friends to try and get back at her for doing that. So on the evening of Friday, November 14th, 97, Rena was invited to a party by her friends. I'm going to use that word loosely because they were not her friends. Near the Craig Flower Bridge in the city of Saanich, BC. So this was a common spot for rowdy teenagers to go. Many different cliques would mingle, and while at the bridge, it is claimed that the teenagers were drinking alcohol and smoking weed. Rena was there, but witnesses say that she just kind of stood around. She wasn't really joining in on the drugs and alcohol. She was just kind of there.
She was there to be there.
Yeah, I think she was there to, like, look cool and stuff.
My life, yeah. I used to always go, like, I was never a huge drinker, but I would always DD, I'd always go to the parties. And just literally to make an appearance.
Yeah, I was the exact same way.
Like, in the group.
I never drank when I went out. I was always DD. To me, it was like, I was growing up where I could drink at home with my parents, and I would rather do that than go out and get, like, piss fucking drunk with people that I didn't really trust. And maybe that's how she was. Like, maybe she didn't really trust them, and that's why she wasn't putting herself in a vulnerable situation, but she still was putting herself in a vulnerable situation being around these people in general.
Yeah.
So at some point in the night, Rena was swarmed by a group later called the Shoreline Six, who beat her first. So witnesses said that one of the girls, Nicole Cook, put a cigarette out on Rena's forehead. I know. And about seven or eight others stood by and watched as they repeatedly hit, punch, and kick Rena. So she was found with cigarette burns on her skin, and apparently attempts were made to set her hair on fire. So the first beating ended when one of the girls told the others to stop, which, good job on that fucking girl.
That's like, brave.
Yeah. Could you imagine? And these girls are like into like LA street gangs and shit.
So sad.
It's fucking scary. So after that first beating, Rena managed to walk away, but was followed by two members of the original group. Carrie Sims, formerly known as Kelly Edwards. Kelly Ellard.
Kelly Ellard, okay.
15, and Warren Golowski, 16. So the pair dragged Rena to the other side of the bridge, made her remove her shoes and jackets, and beat her for a second time. Carrie Sim denies holding Rena's head underwater, but does admit to rolling her beaten, unconscious body into the water at her day parole hearing on November 30th, 2017. So despite an alleged pack mentality among the people involved to not rat each other out, by the following Monday, rumors of the alleged murder spread throughout the Shoreline Middle School. Rena was a student at the nearby school, Colquitts Middle School. So several uninvolved students and teachers heard rumors, but no one came forward to report it to the police. Which is just, it's so sad.
I'm so, like, caught up in the fact that people that age had the audacity to do that to somebody else, you know? Like, I mean, I saw fights happen all the time, but my God, to, like, hold somebody down, to beat them senselessly, like...
But I think also these girls, and even the guy that was involved, they didn't come from, like, a really good...
Clearly, their childhoods right? were like, fucked, yeah.
Their entire life is kind of just up in shambles, and they're just trying to be cool, and they're trying to show each other that they're cool.
And tough.
And it's just, yeah.
And pack mentality. I mean, people do weird things exactly, in groups. Exactly,
pack mentality. So the rumors were confirmed 8 days later on November 22nd, 1997, when police using helicopters found Rena's partially clothed body washed ashore at the Gorge Intel, which is a major waterway on Vancouver Island. So the coroner ruled the death to be a drowning. An autopsy later revealed that Rena...
Do you say drowning?
what is it? Drowning.
Drowning. Drowning.
Oh.
Oh, vocabulary.
I am so good at this. English is my first language.
Oh my god, it's like when I said conversion instead of like occasion or something.
It's been a long day. So an autopsy later revealed that Rena had sustained significant injuries, and that her head injuries were severe enough to have killed her if she had not been drowned first. So, in June 1999, Warren was convicted of second-degree murder and given a life sentence, but because he was 16 at the time of the murder, he was eligible for parole after serving 7 years. In November 2004, he was denied his first chance at day parole.
Good.
But just listen to him, because I actually don't hate Warren. Like, I hate him in the sense that he did this thing, but he's not a bad guy. So, a little bit of background. I didn't write this down, but a little bit of background on him is he lived with his dad. I don't know where his mom was. It seemed like she kind of just left. So his dad and him moved to Vancouver Island. His dad at one point met someone in the States, I believe in Las Vegas, and he was just kind of like, okay, I'm moving. And like, are you coming with me? And he was like, I don't want to. Like, I want to stay here. And his dad was like, okay, cool, bye.
What?
Left. Left the kid in this like tiny little friggin' like, just a community that's like full of trailers, like a trailer park, and just left. And he would send him money every couple months. So Warren was like, obviously he's confused. He's like
abandoned.
Going through, like, yeah, he feels abandoned. He starts into a gang. He gets into a gang. So he starts like wearing the red colors. I think that's, is that Bloods or Crips?
Bloods, red.
Okay.
Wouldn't Crips be like blue? I'm pretty sure. What?
I don't know. Black? No, I feel like it's blue and red. I don't know. Anyways, so he starts wearing red of his, like, gang colors to, like, all over the place. He apparently went through, like, beatings to get into this gang. So he has, like, gang mentality, which I think is what triggered this. And they said that he had a girlfriend and stuff, and the girlfriend's family would take care of him. And they did, you know, she did, the mom would do the laundry for him and, like, really took care of him. And his girlfriend was actually there that night. She felt sick and left. So he didn't go with her, and there was, in the case, they were saying that the reason he did it was because he was in love with Carrie. I don't see that at all. I see that as this got out of hand, and he's already in a gang. He's already, like, going through initiation.
He already has to follow through.
Right? He's there. And I don't know if this wasn't part of the gang, but I think just the gang mentality that he had of, like, beat someone up. If they've done something wrong to you, you get them back. And he was friends with these people, and that's kind of how he got brought into it.
So is the girl who got beat, Rena?
Yes.
Is she a part of the Bloods?
No, he's the only person that's a part of the gangs.
Okay, okay.
So that's why I think he was just...
He'd seen what happens when you wrong somebody?
Yeah, in the gang mentality. None of these other people that were in this case were a part of the gang.
Okay.
Only he was. And I think that that's what happened is... He's seen what happens when you wrong someone, and he just wanted to be there for his friend and follow through with it. Serena's family did not contest the parole because Warren expressed remorse and took responsibility for his part of the murder. In July 2006, he was granted escorted temporary access from the jail. December 2006, Warren was eligible. I am so terrible today. Eligible to apply for day parole again, which he was granted in June 2007. So while incarcerated, Warren discovered that he is Métis. So this played a huge role in the parole hearing as he asked the parole board to incorporate his elders into the process, and various healing circles brought Warren and Rena's parents together. So he really wanted to bring Rena's parents into this whole thing because he wanted to heal with them.
Wow.
I know, and that's what makes me think that he's not this terrible guy. He just had a lapse in his childhood, and it shouldn't have happened.
Well, and when you grow up with absolutely no guidance, support, or no role model, no stability, no structure, you follow the crowd because that's what you've had to do. Mm-hmm. So the fact that he's making such effort to right his wrongs is just insane.
And that's what like really made me. And so in receiving day parole, he proceeded to hug every member of the parole board and those present in the hearing, and that included Rena's parents. And actually Rena's parents were really happy for him. So he really did really well. So Warren was released on full parole in June 2010. So let's jump into Carrie Sim.
Oh, God, I don't like her.
Oh, okay. So, I don't either. So as for Carrie Sim, she was initially convicted in March 2000 for second-degree murder in Rena's death. So I'm just going to say that her case, and I don't really get that into it because I really want to focus on the victims, and I fucking hate even talking about the people that were convicted.
That don't deserve to be talked about.
Yeah. So I don't like this part of it, but I think this case was so important on Vancouver Island because of how fucking messy this got. Like, with, she used the system. So yeah, she was convicted in Rena's death, but in February 2003, this conviction was overturned and a new trial was ordered. Something had happened with the judge, whatever. So they overturned it. So the second trial ended in a mistrial, as there was a hung jury in 2004.
So a hung jury? What do you mean by that?
So they couldn't come to a decision. Mm. So from what I understand, everyone was on board, and there was one person or a couple people that weren't on board, and they couldn't agree, and they had went over it. You can't make a decision. Like, if you don't all come to the same...
Then it doesn't go through.
You can't go through.
Yeah.
So they were a hung jury. So a third and final trial was ordered, and Carrie was convicted again of second-degree murder in April 2005, given an automatic life sentence without parole, without the eligibility of parole for 7 years. So the Supreme Court ruled that her conviction stands because the error by the original trial judge was harmless. So I'm just going to... I read some information. I actually got some information from another podcast, and this really upsets me. So she started sending letters back and forth to another guy that was in jail. Okay, so they started getting to know each other. I believe he was like, he did a lot of robberies kind of deal. He gets out, and then she gets that where their boyfriend, girlfriend can come in for a visit and they can have sex.
Conjugal visits.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So they get that. How? What the fuck? How did she get that when he just got out of jail?
Actually, while we're, like, total random thing here, okay. But I was watching World's Deadliest Prisons or something on Netflix, and there's this, is it in Poland? It's, like, a crazy jail, and there's this guy who's in there for killing, like, a crap ton of women. He was a serial killer, and he would, like, violently beat them and kill them, and he admitted to, like, oh, God, I wish I remembered, like, between 40 and 60, but they actually think it was, like, in the hundreds. Mm. And this girl was, like, infatuated with his story and started writing letters to him. And she's, like, he's, like, 60 or 70, and she's, like, was in her early 20s when she started talking to him and fell in love with him, in quotations. He was allowed conjugal visits after a certain point, and now she's pregnant and, like, had his kid and shit. And it's like, whoa. Like, why is somebody... I mean, like, conjugal visits for somebody who was... Like, I understand conjugal visits. I do. But that's so fucked up.
I know. One of my friends, her boyfriend was a drug dealer, and she got conjugal visits with him. And he was never violent. Like,
there was no history.
Yeah, he was a drug dealer kind of deal. So she's talking to this guy, he gets out of jail, they're allowed conjugal visits. She gets pregnant. Yeah, that's fun. She gets pregnant and has her baby in jail. Oh. And she's allowed to keep the baby in jail and all this stuff. It's really weird. So, as an article I read from October 2018, Carrie was granted an extension to her day parole, and she was successfully completed a substance treatment, and she now lives in a halfway house with her baby.
Right now?
Yep.
What?
Yep. So, that's as of October 2018, so that just happened.
That is so...
I know, it's very upsetting. And I had read something where, like, Rena's parents had talked about it, and they just said, like, one, it's like the death of their child doesn't fucking matter, because this girl, it was all about the case of Carrie Sims. That was it. Everyone just cared about, like, Carrie. And they forgot about the victim.
Which they always do. Everyone always, like, if you ever go into any big case, it's always like, oh, this serial killer's life, or this murderer's life was so horrible. It's like, great, but I want to know what the victim did for fun. Like, I want to know what her parents were like and what it was like raising this victim and how earth-shattering it was when they lost this person. Like,
And that's one thing that Reyna's mom did say. Like, she said, it's frustrating they didn't get a say. She's not sure that they would want to have a say in what happens to Carrie after this. But it was the frustrating thing that, like, she gets to have sex. She gets to have these visits. She plays around the fucking system like no one's business. And they just, she, at the end of the day, like, they don't get their daughter back. And yet this girl, she says now, Carrie's saying that she's turning her life around for her baby. But she's like, that could have been my, like, my child could have had kids, and my child, and they always go back to, like, what if this wouldn't have happened? Like, my child could have had, I could have had grandkids by now. And it's really, it's just a really sad case. So that's the story of the Shoreline Six murders.
Oh,
I know, bums you out.
Thanks, Murderheads, for listening to another one of Murder, She Taped episodes. Liked what you heard? We need followers to know we don't just do this for our own entertainment. Toss us a follow at Murder, She Taped on Instagram and continue staying up to date with our MST podcast and the shenanigans of Nikki and Tay.
Have a story request? A local hometown crime you want to share? Send us an email at murdershetaped@gmail.com with details to the story for our review. Stay antisocial, Murderheads.